Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community, plus a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. My name is Eric Osterman, and I'll be your host today. It's December 27th, 2023. It's our last Office Hours before the end of the year. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for startups that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. We do this by leveraging our over 200 battle-tested Terraform modules that have been downloaded probably 100 million times or so. No matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help your startup launch better products faster to free up your bandwidth for innovation so you can nail your value delivery every time. And if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, just head over to cloudposse.com/quiz. Again, cloudposse.com/quiz. Answer a few quick questions and we'll plot a roadmap for success for free. Now, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format is very informal. Engage as much as you'd like, ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source or Terraform modules, this is a great place to ask. For those on the recording, we host these calls live. Just go to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours to register and get an invite in your calendar. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's Office Hours helpful, please share it with your team. You can do that by heading over to youtube.com/cloudposse and finding the recording there. Or maybe send us a short testimonial about the value you're getting in our Slack team or on our YouTube videos. So remember, we're not just creating content here, we are building a community and we can't do that without you. So your help is much appreciated. With that said, here are the cool announcements for the past week. I consider it a slow news week given everybody's on vacation here in the US at least. grasping at straws here for some cool things. This one here, if you have your own like GitHub profile page, like you can create a repository, I believe it's called the same as your username. So if your username is Osterman, create a repo called Osterman, and you can put a README in here with content. Well, one of the nice things you can put in there to show your activity is a snake game, make you stand out a little bit from anyone else. So this is just taking a look at your commit history and animating it for everyone else to see. And it's implemented as a GitHub action. Next announcement is, I know a lot of members of my team are using the GitHub client a lot more. That's nice. What might be more convenient is just being able to whip that up and easily navigate between pull requests and issues. Here's a little utility that lets you do that. It's Go-based, so it's cross-compiled and works on the platform of your choice. Here's one of the earlier tacos that came out. It was about 2 years ago, looks like. OTF, as it's called. This was recently abandoned as a project. Looks like it had quite a few stars, 471, but it's no longer being developed. It had some, you know, the common type functionality you'd expect to see, including like your live streaming, Terraform, plan and apply, and a progress bar and indicator. Anyways, this project has been abandoned. This is nice. So we've had to spend a lot of time documenting for customers how to validate that their clusters are eligible for upgrade, identifying Helm charts and resources, leveraging deprecated APIs and so forth. Amazon has added a built-in command now to the AWS CLI, presumably, so you can get similar information. I'm not sure all of the bells and whistles that it has, but it's at least an acknowledgement that this is a big problem in upgrading Kubernetes clusters. It's not just press upgrade. One of our partners, Latacora, they are a DevOps for hire company. They have recently published or updated at least some SCP policies that are recommended to meet various controls of the security architecture review process. These are implemented in Terraform. You can look at some of the submodules for security best practices and infrastructure best practices to prevent certain misconfigurations or bad practices. We'll share a link to all these afterwards. So this one was trending on Reddit. Thought it was kind of nice. It's a an alternative Kubernetes dashboard that you can expose to your team to navigate what's inside the cluster. Provides a simpler view than the Kubernetes dashboard. What would arguably make it more interesting improvement would be, how it handles logins remotely. The Kube dashboard relies on Kube proxy, which kind of sucks, I think, from a developer experience. So if this can be integrated easily with single sign-on, that'd be nice. I haven't looked too much further into it. It is a CNCF incubating project, or in the sandbox of the CNCF. And last one here, or not last one, another one here for GitHub. In your GitHub Actions, you probably have a lot of dependencies. One of the most common ways of installing those dependencies is either A, look for a GitHub action that installs that one dependency, and then find another GitHub action that installs yet that other dependency. And yet, most of the dependencies, at least we encounter, are published as artifacts to GitHub releases. So here's a GitHub action by Jack Storm that will automatically install any binary as a result of a GitHub release so that you can use it in your actions. So a very reusable action. And one of the areas I don't think has received enough investment is how do you create test data? In your release engineering and CI/CD pipelines. It's well understood that you don't want to have production data in dev or staging. One for no if for no other reason that it can have sensitive personal identifiable information, credit card data, health data, et cetera, depending on your industry. And at the same time, just generating random data is not really that useful. And if you're testing against a data set that is significantly different than what you have in production, you're also not going to identify performance issues and so forth. So NeoSync is another project attempting to simplify that process through an ETL workflow and data obfuscation. I believe they are backed by Y Combinator, or I think, no, I said that wrong. I think I found it on Hacker News. I don't think they are backed by Y Combinator. And my last minor announcement here is just something I noticed as I was clicking around here. Maybe someone else can point it out. GitHub is now featuring the license as a tab on the README. So if you are publishing a license file, GitHub will recognize that and add a tab here. I assume it'll do that for other of the community health files available, but I haven't tested it. Anyone know more about this one?
I mean, yeah, I've noticed it pick up other types of licenses as well so far, but haven't seen too much into it yet.
Yeah, it will probably do all the other licenses. But you have this GitHub community health files. Let me see. Here are the ones that GitHub pushes. So, security file, a contributing file, a code of conduct file. Oh, yeah, look. That's really cool. See? So that validates it there. So if you have a code of conduct, that's now a tab. If you have a security file, that's now a tab. So nice that GitHub is promoting those a little bit more in the UI. Also, another update, kind of cool. I think we talked about it last week on Office Hours, is VHS for creating demos. So now we've updated a couple of our projects with updated screenshots. So here you can kind of see one example. This is using Geodesic. Geodesic is one of our many projects. It's a toolbox container image that you can use as a base image for all your like DevOps automation. Run it locally on your workstation, run it as a jump box, run it as a container in your GitHub Actions, whatever makes sense for you. So here's an example using that in the interactive shell that it packs. So previously we had a broken image. And then previous to that, we had a example of what it looked like 3 years ago. So this is a nice way to keep those up to date. And we've done the same thing with Build Harness, which is a collection of make files that we use to automate a lot of Cloud Posse's repositories. Here's an example of initializing a new repository to leverage the Build Harness and how we did that. Also using VHS to update those demo images. So that's all I got. Anyone have some interesting announcements this week that caught your attention? All right, then. Let's jump into Q&A. So we got a small attendance today due to the holidays. Any of you have questions, feel free to jump in. Chris, Isaac, Mark, Oliver, any questions? All right.
I do have a question, but it's something I'm struggling with right now, so I don't know that, and it's kind of niche. I don't know that anyone would be able to help me on it, but I'm working on deploying an API gateway solution, an open source one, and one of the things I'm setting up is a fallback certificate. But for some reason, I'm just The fallback certificate is issued by, AWS PCA. So I use that service from AWS for my clusters. For some reason, the certificate is right there, but the solution keeps on saying that it can't find the certificate. So I don't know that it's the best question for this forum, but has anyone experienced that before?
When you say that the certificate is there, if you exec into the pod, you see the certificate.
Exactly. So I can, keep CODL, get certs, describe the certs. The cert is active, it's valid, it's not expired, everything is there, it has the right name. But then
But when you go in, if you exec into a pod, do you also see the CA installed?
the pod, I haven't tried that yet.
I'm definitely haven't played with that stuff for a while, so I'm probably not the most versed at it. I would just want to make sure that you have the CA's public certificate there that would validate then those pods. Also, whatever's going to use that certificate, that pod needs to be created after you've deployed Cert Manager. Or what are you using? You're using Cert Manager with PCA?
Yes, Cert Manager PCA.
Yeah. And then those pods would have had to been created after that cert manager was deployed. Dan, do you have any ideas?
Well, the two guesses might be that it's in a different namespace, so it's not finding the certificate in the same namespace. You might have to specify that. Other thing might be access itself for whatever service it is trying to access that API for certificates, but I'm not sure. Other than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm gonna keep looking. It is in the correct namespace, so,
Sure.
but you did give me an idea because I created them, excuse me, at the same time, the certificate at the home release. I would have thought that that really shouldn't matter because, you know, if I delete the pod, it should pick it up, but it's not. So I'm just gonna remove the deployment and just start over now that the cert is already there and see if that makes any difference.
Yeah, worth a shot, I suppose. And then if that fixes it, I'll be setting up the dependency order deployment in the future. Yeah. Is this so you've been asking a lot of questions over the last few months or a couple months. I know it started you're going down possibly the route of a service mesh. Is this to as a alternative to that?
Yeah, I didn't think that we're quite ready for a service mesh, but we do need some of the capabilities that an API gateway does provide. And so looking into that.
And which one did you select for your API gateway?
I picked an unpopular choice. It's called Apache API 6.
Okay.
So most people, you know, use Kong or KrakenD or something else, but
Yeah.
I kind of liked I liked the documentation for API 6 as well as the plugins that they have available in their completely open source tier. So for example, something that I was interested in was OpenID Connect, using that to secure microservices. Kong kind of puts that behind their paid tier. Although I think there is like an open source solution from Nokia or something that kind of provides that service. But you know, that was an example of something that just came out of the box with these guys.
That's cool. So far, it's been easy to get up and running, with exception of your TLS issue.
Of my current issue, yes, so far so good.
Yeah. All right, cool. I wasn't familiar with this one, so I think it's good that you went with a CNCF non-commercial solution like Kong. All right. Any other takers? Any other questions? Oliver, you always got something.
Yeah. I guess one thing that comes to mind is Atlantis. It's really something that you know, I have a one project where it could fit in nicely. I'm gonna be comparing it with Terrateme. And so I guess, you know, if there is a question that I could think of, it would be like, how, I guess, useful is something like Atlantis in reality? Like, is it, you know, the reason I'm asking that is that sometimes some tools have most of what you need to solve a problem, but then there's one thing missing that is really, you know, basically you can't use it in a real life scenario. And so I guess maybe that's one question
Yeah.
is, you know, what's people's experience with it in a practical, you know, setting where there's a team dealing with Terraform deployments.
I know from people in the community that have worked at some very large institutions, some are in the banking industry, that they're it's being used to manage possibly thousands of projects in Atlantis. What a lot of the teams use that use Atlantis, they also use something like TerraGrunt, and then there's a project called like TerraGrunt HCL to Atlantis or something. Yeah, this one here by Transcend. I think it's like I forget if it's Lauren or who someone in our community is also helping maintain this, I believe. But this will help you generate your Atlantis configuration if you're using TerraGrunt. Now,
Right.
you did say something really astute, though, which is like it will get you probably, well, okay, it will get you all the way there until you start developing more opinions. And that last 20% is going to be a lot harder because it is a monolithic code base that you'd have to fork and patch and update. Now it supports quite a lot in Atlantis, and it has breathed new life in the last couple of years as a result of massive community support. Atlantis, they have applied to enter the CNCF. So if you go into the
Okay.
Atlantis channel in our SweetOps community, there's some gung-ho members there, including Pepe. And Pepe is one of the core
Okay.
maintainers. RB or Nitro Code is one of the core maintainers. So you can ask them questions there as well. Let's see. I'm curious, CNCF Atlantis, see what the latest news is. Oh. Oh, wait, no. Sandbox, this is the application. All right, so no. Presented to tag recording notes here. We asked if the project would be a better fit in OpenTofu. The group expressed concern that they wish to support both TF and OpenTofu, but we answered that this should be feasible within OpenTofu as well. The question for us is if OpenTofu tends to accept other projects and implementations too. This is a really interesting one because OpenTofu is backed by a lot of the taco companies, so Spacelift, N-Zero, Terra Team, Mass Driver, Scalar. Yeah. So if they would adopt Atlantis, that'd be an interesting one. Anyways, seems like there hasn't been much
Yeah,
movement
that's fair.
in adding it to.
Great.
Soon to be a CNCF project. This was created last week. Okay. All right. So then I'd be remiss if I didn't also throw Cloud Posse's hat into the mix. So actually, Dan Miller's been working on a lot of that stuff, and he's on the call.
Yeah, so one thing I just want to note real quick is that this documentation is going to be updated today. So right now it's using older docs.
Yeah. So what we did
Now, does
was.
this have to do, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, just to set the stage, what we did was instead of going with Atlantis, we implemented them in GitHub Actions. This has been a significant endeavor. I don't believe there's any other GitHub Actions that have as had as much investment in them for Terraform, but it does build on top of Atmos. So Atmos is a requirement for doing it. And this is free and open source. And the reason why I think this in the long term is better than something than Atlantis is because it's built across multiple GitHub Actions. There's even more that aren't listed here that I think might be in that documentation Dan's working on. And what that allows you to do is have full control over the entire process, provided you're on GitHub and you use GitHub Actions.
Right. Yeah, that's actually interesting. So a couple of things that come to mind. One of them is how does Atmos handle, I guess, the state lock? So
Yeah.
remember a few weeks ago I mentioned that so one issue when you're in a team is okay, so someone writes a plan and meanwhile there's other work on another branch and you kind of want to have a way of preventing or increasing the likelihood that the apply will work, and things like Atlantis and Terra Team, they have some sort of locking mechanism where it's more than just a state lock that's built into the back end, Terraform. It kind of locks it at a PR level. And so I haven't used that before, so I don't know, how tricky or painful it is to use in practice. But that seemed like you know, quite worth trying. So does Atmos do anything on that level, or is it a totally different strategy that you guys use?
Hey, 1 second. Dan, can you make a note that we gotta fix those to-dos there? That's not good. So what you bring up is an accurate point. So there's something in Terraform built in for locking. That locking is more at an atomic level and prevents state corruption, but it doesn't prevent you from doing bad things. What you need to do is have some mechanism for locking some logical workspace or a Terraform root module. And even if you have locking, it would be advisable to do some form of plan file database. So you invalidate any plan files that are no longer accurate. So that,
right.
Yeah. We've started there instead. None of the other GitHub actions that you will see do an accurate job handling your plan file. So they'll show you a plan, but they won't store that artifact. They won't retrieve that artifact on apply. And that's what we do. So we store that artifact in a metadata storage backend, such as S3. Then we have a metadata table in Dynamo, but it's built in a pluggable manner. So if you're on Azure, you could replace Dynamo with Azure's NoSQL database alternative. I forget what it's called. And you can replace S3 with Azure's blob storage. We're going to be building support for that in January. We have a customer sponsoring that development. Right now, we support Amazon S3 and DynamoDB as the state storage backend for that. So what that means in practicality is you at least won't have the risk of reverting changes because the plan files are tainted, invalidated as soon as any of the affected workspaces there are modified. So any other plan files affecting those same workspaces are invalidated then. Now, that from a developer perspective, that still is not ideal. And you'd rather not that situation not happen altogether. So locking would be desirable. We haven't implemented like locking at a GitHub action level UX yet, but I believe we have that on our roadmap, something we'll look into. What we have as a compensating control is the drift detection. So if we invalidate the plan, yet your PR was merged, and now the plan file was invalidated, we'll pick that up as a drift so that you have a way of remediating.
Right. Okay. Yeah, interesting. Because I think both Atlantis and Terra team implement a lock.
They do.
So yeah, I think we'll definitely have to try out all three.
You know what sucks though about,
you know, which ones are going to get pretty useful.
What sucks about the Atlantis implementation though is to unlock it. Yeah, it exposes a very lightweight web service that is unauthenticated. So it's up to you then to put a layer of authentication in front of that web service.
Oh yeah, right.
Unless I'd be curious if Atlantis lock file OIDC. Let's see. Just curious if these closed PRs were addressing the lock file service. Yeah, Anyways,
I think I.
any other questions we can get answered today?
Not a question, but I think I just found the problem.
Oh, with what you were doing?
Yes.
Oh, cool. What was it?
Even though I have the cert, and it's in the right namespace and everything, I think what was missing is that I needed to create a resource that tells the gateway about it. I pasted the link in the chat, and I just checked my other environment where I have it working, and I have that resource there, but I don't have it in my staging where I'm trying to promote it to.
Oh, that makes sense. So it wasn't being, yeah, you didn't link the two together, the certificate that was created with how API 6 would find it. Okay, cool. It's amazing how sometimes talking through the problem helps, even if we weren't any help.
Oh, no, you were 100%.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions we can address today?
I've got another question actually came up from something you said, Eric, is because in one project, you know, the client told me that they're going to be forced to move away from GitHub Actions to GitLab because of some policies in their IT department related to security and whatever. So, yeah, that's
you always
quite
find these
because
companies, we Oliver.
What's that?
You always find these companies.
Yeah, no shortage of technical challenges, yeah. Which, you know, is what I live and breathe, so that's okay. Yeah, so that's going to be an interesting, you know, experience. So I don't know, what do people do in GitHub Actions? Like I hear there's a similar concept to GitHub.
GitLab. GitLab has GitLab pipelines, but I don't know. I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I do not know what I'm talking about right now, because I'm not a big GitLab proponent or current on everything it does. But the number of controls that GitHub and GitHub Actions and GitHub Runners and GitHub Enterprise has around runners is huge. There's probably, you could probably write a 200 page book about all the ways, or 500 page book about all the ways you can secure runners and the things you should do on that I would be hard pressed to see GitLab implementing to that depth. From, you know, what runners, what jobs, and what repos can run, what their permissions are, the dynamic credentials with different permissions, you know, and the GitHub apps and the ability to integrate with OIDC, but I know GitLab supports that as well for your jobs. So mm-hmm. I don't know. The one that I don't like about GitLab pipelines is that you only have a single workflow file, and then that workflow file can include or import as many other workflow files, but you have to create all the conditional logic inside of that workflow. Versus in GitHub and GitHub Actions, you can have as many workflow files as you want, and each workflow file determines its own triggers, and then you can use code owner. Mm-hmm. To control who can modify what code owners' files are there and so forth. GitHub also has the concept of environments and environment protection rules. I don't know if GitLab has the concept of environment protection rules, but that's how you restrict kind of who can click approve and deploy. And then that logic itself can call another GitHub action. So it's very flexible. You can create all of your own protection rules as code. So I don't know. It's a fair point to move to GitLab, and companies can have all their own concerns. I just don't like when they say we're doing it because it's required for security. Dude, I'm pretty sure there are bigger companies with more money riding on it on GitHub, and somehow they figured it out. So it can't be for security reasons. It's got to be personal preference. You know, they like the UI more. The cost was better, but it's not security.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that the decision makers are not at the technical level, so it wouldn't be anything related to, you know, the interface or anything like that. It would be, you know, cost, perceived security advantages, real or perceived, I guess I should say. And maybe, those, it's something at that level.
Yeah. Fair enough. Dan, were you going to say something?
Yeah, so I've used GitLab before, and they do support environment approvals, and it is actually
custom
a little bit
logic though.
Yeah, you can set it up for different environments with different rules in the same way you can with GitHub. Cool. And if anything, it's more supported in GitLab because GitHub requires enterprise to be able to do that. But in GitLab, you can do it natively.
Right. A lot of the advanced security stuff is in GitHub Enterprise, which you do have to pay for, and a lot more. So I can understand cost, therefore, being a reason to go to GitLab, so you get some of the feature parity without spending as much.
Yeah, and that might be it. So maybe when they were talking with security, you know, better security then meant better, but at the price that... at a different price point, right?
So all things
it's
relative.
Same security, but at...
yeah,
exactly.
Cool. Any other questions?
But I'm definitely going to check out the Kubernetes, the EKS Insights upgrade, because that's something I have to do regularly. So. Gonna be checking that out. That's see how useful it is.
Yeah,
I end up having. I've had to use, you know, Pluto and stuff like that in the past, and that works okay. But we'll see how that compares to that. Cool.
Yeah, one of the things we've been wanting to do is create a GitHub action that runs on a schedule that just produces a job summary of the readiness. For upgrading a cluster, so you have one place to go and understand what you have.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
List insights.
Be interesting to see if you know, a tool like ChatGPT can, you know, because I remember when I upgraded, there was this one client that, so they had to upgrade the 124 to 125 or something. No, it was a bit further back than that. When the major change was with the deployment, deployments had a new, one of the fields that had changed, maybe it was like the service account was, had a different syntax or something like that. So, the change was not trivial to implement. You couldn't just, you know, tweak a parameter or something like that. So it would be neat to see if ChatGPT could, you know, say, hey, this one is, all you need to do is change this, you know, YAML to this YAML and on these three pods and redeploy and you'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the direction everything's headed, whether we're there now or that'll be later. Don't know. All right. Any other questions we can get answered?
I have more of a philosophical question.
Okay.
In terms, sorry, let me mute my Slack. I don't know why it keeps going on. In terms of a DevOps team, like, I have found that at least where I am currently, it wasn't this case in other roles because we didn't really have DevOps teams. The engineering teams did all the DevOps and infra as well. But at my current job, I have found that the DevOps team takes on a sort of role of all-round help desk. And it's very funny because it's pretty much when everyone, including, very senior engineers, are stumped, their instinctive reaction is, you know what, we're going to create a ticket for DevOps to look into this and help us out. And at some point, to some extent, I don't mind that, but I'm mind it when I think about how it might be infantilizing some of our devs, including senior devs. And I also mind it when there is so much unplanned work that it affects important initiatives that we need to get done and out of the door. So I'm just wondering if am I being realistic or unrealistic to think that a DevOps team doesn't necessarily need to be a help desk for the programmers and the software developers and at a company? Or is that just normal and I just am being exposed to it for the first time?
Well, I think it's inevitable at a certain size company, and then what you might be at this inflection point where you might not have the budget to build out a separate dedicated support arm of your team, so you're being tasked with having to do both, and that'll work until you get to the point where well, it doesn't work anymore, and you have to scale out and hire more for it. I think one of the key things here is having specialists is critical. Like you'll have front-end specialists, DBA specialists, you'll have QA specialists, but they all have some foot in the pool of engineering or software development. And your title, being air quote DevOps engineer or something like that, is I think your role is to establish the platforms, but then enable everyone else to take over it. And inevitably, you're going to be then faced with all the support questions. Let's face it, as an engineer, we're always blaming, for the most part, something else other than ourselves first. And once that's been eliminated, then, oh, okay, yeah, actually, that was my fault. PEBCAC probably exists between keyboard and computer. So in your situation, I think I don't know. What would any thoughts, Dan?
Yeah, so I have a lot of thoughts on this because I've been in that position before at a previous company. And I think this the nature of DevOps is everything that isn't development. So a developer might be like, well, I don't know what this is. DevOps, that's a DevOps question. But DevOps's job is kind of just to be really good at Googling. So we can kind of figure it out eventually, but the question is whether or not that's actually a task for us. So what we previously did was they could create tickets, of course, but then we would label the tickets as something that is our responsibility or isn't our responsibility. If it's not our responsibility, yeah, we'll still help you. We'll get to it eventually, but it's not a priority at the moment. So it's really just categorization with project management is the I think the best solution.
That's an interesting idea,
It's a form of triage.
Exactly. Yeah, it's triage the tickets.
That's
And then
definitely.
maybe like if you do figure it out and help them with the triage tickets, you could paste like what you Googled. And then next time maybe they could read that and say, oh, he just Googled, how do I do this? And the first answer was the solution.
Also, what are you using as your internal knowledge base?
We use Jira and Confluence,
You're in
but
Confluence.
they don't search it. I have spent so much time and effort, like making sure that my team writes documentation, as well as answers to common problems and issues and whatnot. No one looks at it, that stuff.
Yeah, that's my experience too.
Me too.
Except the reference material. Yeah, sorry, I good.
Yeah, I was gonna say me too. I was very bullheaded on this, and I really tried to push hard on our team to use Confluence and document. And I think there was, I don't know if it was conscious civil disobedience or actual civil or direct civil disobedience. on updating Confluence and writing docs there. It just didn't work. We got stuff there. It was never current and up to date. It was never a point of congregation for the team. No one wanted to interact with those products. So I don't know that I have the perfect answer or solution for it, but I will say we're getting a lot better. So we have a discussion board that we use internally, and this is using GitHub discussions, and this is the most I could have asked for so far in getting everyone to start writing documentation or making proposals before we go implement things that we were never seeing in Confluence before. And the barrier to entry for discussions is so low. You're already in GitHub. It supports GitHub flavored markdown. It's easy to comment, it's easy to mark answers. It's free, it doesn't cost you anything. You can link to it in your organization. So when I click on this tab here, I could be anywhere in this organization, and I'm just one click away from discussions.
That's really cool. We don't use GitHub, so we're not lucky enough to have this, but I have to check if GitLab has something similar. How is the search on this? Because I think one of the things that people struggle
with.
Go on.
Okay. Just one alternative to this that I've used a little bit is Slack Teams. So that's a paid service by Stack or Stack Exchange. And it's basically Stack Overflow, but, you know, private. And it's the usual format. Looks a little bit like, it looks like what you're familiar with on Stack Overflow. That can be quite interesting. It's and that would obviously not be, that would be available from GitLab as well.
Yeah.
But I also have a little bit of a different experience with Confluence. So there are some, I think, categories of information that fit quite well in Confluence. You know, so say you have a procedure to SSH into your EC2 instances through a bastion, right? So, you know, when someone joins a team, you just send them to that page. They'll follow the instructions once, they'll set up their SSH config and whatever, and then that'll be done. You know, is that better or worse than, say, a Slack question where you then answer and people can upvote whatever, or a GitHub discussion like Eric showed? I think it's, you know, the team culture kind of thing, which whatever it feels more comfortable. So there are some categories of things, I think, that have worked well in Confluence for us. That's certainly not something that I would throw out the window. But I think there's also types of documentation that people just don't want to read in general. So like I like to have naming conventions and things like that because it simplifies a lot of automation. And so I put those in Confluence, and I find that, you know, a lot of people don't read them. So, but in a code review, I can say, hey, you know, this is, you know, look at this page, item 5, if you want an explanation of why we have that, there you have it. So, you know, your mileage will vary with a tool like Confluence.
Yeah. The biggest challenge is always the barrier to entry to creating documentation. So if it takes too much time, no one's going to do it because we don't have time day to day to write up a big document unless it's a ticketed item. So that's always the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, in our case, we have actually really worked hard to have up-to-date documentation, and I'm very proud of my team for all the work that they've done to achieve that. And we've always tried to just, you know, say, just get it out there. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be detailed. A little thing, something is better than nothing. So that has helped. I wonder if part of the problem is I feel like Confluence search might be really bad, or I'm just better at looking for keywords. I don't know if it's because I'm better at looking for keywords or I know the domain better. And what often happens is someone asks a question and I go grab the document and I reply, have you had a look at this? And then they're like, oh, thank you. And then I wonder, like, did they even search for it at all? or not. And I also kind of feel kind of assholeish to do that for every single person, is to say like you're dumb. Why didn't I wonder if they wonder that, like, does he think I'm dumb? I didn't even search for this. But at the same time, my team and I put so much work to create the documentation. Rather than repeat myself, I feel like it's better for me to link it. And next time, maybe you are motivated to
For
search
sure.
your answer. So it's fascinating.
But one thing that I found though with Confluence documentation, or the Confluence help, not help, the search capabilities, is they are actually quite powerful and configurable, but a lot of people don't know how to use it. So because if you go to like the search box, in the interface that I have, it's in the top right. You can type them some things in. You can filter on a number of things, who wrote it, the project, a number of things, and then there's more advanced search methods as well. And I think the problem might be that you just need like a half hour session just to go over all the ways that you can search and find things in Confluence, because it actually is very powerful.
Yeah, I never thought of doing a Confluence searching tutorial, but it might be worth it. And this also looks interesting. AI is here to solve all the problems, right?
Yeah, but still early days. But I mean, I don't know about you guys. When it's a regular day, I'm using ChatGPT, dozens of times, and I've invested a lot in creating custom GPTs as well. And this integrates with multiple ML systems, including ChatGPT, and it has systems to ingest from Slack, GitHub, Confluence systems you're using. So it'd be interesting if it'd be something one could invest in to do that. It also provides a self-hosted UI that you can use to then query those systems.
That's cool.
I did actually play around earlier on with building something like this, and I'm glad that there is, an open source project that takes that heavy lifting away. I'll have to look
Yeah,
into
pretty
this.
popular too. Almost 6,000 stars now. Well, it's been featured on Hacker News and other places.
Interesting. Yeah.
This looks really cool. We should install this on our internal channel. We'll try it out.
Right?
Yeah, this is my job. Just I perfect.
Exactly. My job is to dangle the carrots and see who takes it. So we'll
Well,
see.
my name is also Dan, so it's Dan Answer. So that's perfect.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that's a good nickname for you. Just you can change your Slack username to Dancer.
I'll just change the profile pic it uses for the bot to mine. No one will know the difference.
Cool.
Oh, this is helpful.
All right. Well, we're up against the end of the hour here, so I think I'll wrap things up unless there's any final questions. Well, thanks everyone. We'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel in a few hours. Go to youtube.com/cloudposse to get that. If you haven't yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do. It helps us out a great bit. And we have our live sessions every Wednesday at 11:30 Pacific, 1:30 Central, 2:30 East Coast time. You can register for those by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. We syndicate these as a podcast at podcast.cloudposse.com. And to hire us, yeah, I got to fix that. I didn't do that last week. I'll do that right now. Go to cloudposse.com/quiz. Again, cloudposse.com/quiz. You'll get to book a session with me directly, and we can see if we'll move the needle for you at your organization. Thanks, everyone. Take care. Have a great rest of your week and
Here.
Happy New
Thanks, all. See you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.